Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us again. This is Dr. Toni, and today I am so glad that I am talking to a woman who has a lot of experience in helping to support kids through challenging times, and this is a challenging time. Today, we're at the end of June in 2020, dealing with a pandemic, dealing with kind of global conversation and a lot of sad, horrific events around racism in the States, in Canada. So I'm really glad to be talking to youth and family psychologist and author Tasha Beelix, to really look at how we can not only support our kids through issues with mental health and anxiety, especially in these times, but also how we can be the best parents we can be, and kind of so that we can support our kids to do that. Tasha is, I think, the perfect person to talk to today. She's been a registered psychologist for over 20 years. She has had a lot of great advanced training in affective neuroscience, in trauma-informed care, emotion-focused family therapy. She also uses eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. She is the co-host of her own podcast, the Raising Strong Kids Through Divorce podcast. She is the author of an amazing book, What to Do with a Feeling. And she's been involved in the community here in Calgary in a number of different ways, helping to support girls with anxiety-based issues with the founder of her own program, Between Girls, at the Lionheart Foundation. She's been a speaker at the Fast and Female Summit for Young Girls in Sports. Tasha, you have had so much experience and have really built some really great resources around dealing with mental health issues. And now, especially with this pandemic and what's going on around the world, it's something that we really need to look at because a lot of people are really struggling. I really think that this may be the most challenging time to be a parent. And that's what I'm almost a little bit glad that my daughter Frankie is only two right now, because I haven't necessarily had to have the challenging conversations and the tough conversations with her yet. But I know that's going to be happening soon in the future. So, what have you seen with kind of your clients and in the world in terms of how to kind of navigate right now with kind of the pandemic and dealing with everything that we're dealing with?
Yes.
I know it's a big thing, right?
It is. And I guess, right off the bat, we all need to, take a step back and I think honor the fact that we're coping in a time where there is no path to follow. Mm. So to me, that is the biggest one. No one knows how to do a pandemic well. we weren't prepped with this one. And so I can reflect back about 3 months ago, and I've worked with youth for so many years and across the spectrum, really high risk youth in terms of, complex families and poverty, and then high performance athletes and perfectionists and anywhere in that spectrum. And And I remember sitting down and talking to some people when school was first closed, and my heart truly just started to kind of break and get really worried for what are the implications to not have structure and to not have the normal supports, because for lots of young people, going to school, that's their safe place. And not only just going to school is your safe place, it might be where you get your meal, but also as parents, that gives us time to go to work and do all the things that we do as parents, so that when we reconnect at the end of the day, everyone's got their battery charged up a little bit. And so we're in a time where, you know, you have people trying to work from home and teach their kids at the same time. And depending on your kids' personalities, or to be honest, really any family, the dynamics that go on in a household, I'm not sure we were ever made to be with our family 24/7. And that's one thing that I kind of giggle, because we've had some amazing, wonderful family times through this. I have three girls that are all adolescents, and also some really intense times because I'm annoying. My husband's annoying. We get on each other's nerves. My kids want a break from us, but there isn't really anywhere to go. And so not only do I see what's happening kind of on a clinical level with lots of people reaching out for supports for different reasons, and I'll get into that later, but even what's happening in my own household with kids that I would generally say are kind of healthy, average teenagers with their ups and downs.
Yeah, for sure, right? Yeah. I mean, don't we all have a little bit of an annoying side, that especially when we're kind of trapped in the house altogether and don't have an outside world other than kind of home life.
And how we cope with that.
Yeah.
So if you're the person that likes control as your way of coping, you might be cleaning your house a lot and kind of bossing people around. If your way of coping is sort of sticking your head in an iPad and zoning out, there, you know, not every coping skill is one that we want to be doing as a long-term sort of solution. Having lots of different ways of coping with something like this is really important. And I guess that's one thing that I think has kind of been brought to the forefront for me, is realizing we need to do a better job of supporting people at a younger age to know what to do when their body feels depleted and depressed. And what do we do when a body feels really agitated and worried? Because I think there have been a lot of people that once this has started realize, wow, my coping skills are not working for me anymore. I need some help.
Definitely. And I guess even right off the bat with mm-hmm. what you were just saying, I really wonder how we can really distinguish, or if it's worth distinguishing, between kind of what's normal kid behavior, adolescent behavior, when dealing with challenges, and what and where is that point where we really have to maybe step it up even more, get more support, especially getting professional support, like seeing a psychologist or so that mm-hmm. we can really prevent any really severe tragic consequences, because yeah. that has been happening.
Yes, it has been. And so I guess to back it up a little bit, I guess, yeah. you know, normalizing some of the experience that, or I guess the reaction, I guess, to something that just changed everyone's life so quickly, is that there are some things that are really typical that we can imagine are going to happen in our house. You know, kids that maybe were toilet trained are having accidents. People aren't sleeping through the night as well. Little people, and I say little people, and I'm really meaning anyone under the age of 18, who might have been quite social and enjoyed going out and doing activities, you might see a real more isolating behavior, more lethargy, more I'm kind of bored, nothing is really exciting me. And know that that is a common reaction, and that's expected right now. And really, I would put it in the category, I call it like the COVID hangover, because it's so pervasive at every age level right now. And really, I think a big chunk of it is explainable by calling it grief. It is all the psychological, physical, emotional impact of so many losses and so many endings without closure. And so, you know, out of my three girls, I have someone who's a teenager and she is not sleeping well through the pandemic. And so, you know, not everyone would think that this was an okay solution, but, if she can't sleep, she crawls into bed with my husband and I, and I'm like, you know what? Like, if this is this poor kid, like there's a part of her that's like that super feeler self that holds a lot of things in. And I'm like, if being close to her mom or dad, you know, helps her settle down at nighttime and get a good night's sleep, I'm going to do that for the, I didn't think it was going to last so long for the next while, because her little body needs, she's coming back for comfort because she knows that we're a safe base. And so in sharing that, I do it because people will go, oh, you're a psychologist. Your kids must be perfect. Yeah, no. And I say it because I've been talking to a lot of parents with teenagers that can be pretty old and little kids where they're like, we've started to do this because my kid is really, really struggling. And I'm like, take the shame off your shoulders. It's not helpful. We're living in a time where there's no roadmap to follow and you're doing the best instinctual thing that you know. And if it's not hurting anyone, you're okay. And I'm pretty sure my daughter's not going to be sleeping in my bed when she's 18. And I don't know for your little daughter, you know, have you seen changes in her or is it her world scheduled enough and kind of small enough that she hasn't really had any wobbles?
Thankfully, I think that's really been the case. And even just the way that we've had a setup where her world hasn't necessarily changed with just how we've had things set up. She's been really part-time at a very small day home where she's able to go there now and be interacting with kids and have that kind of structure. So she's still kind of thriving where I really feel for the parents of kids who are in a daycare where they're still not there or school age kids where they didn't have anywhere to go but being at home because school is not a possibility at all. Mm-hmm. I feel lucky I'm still at the point where she's again so young that hasn't necessarily been an issue. Although, and this is, it has been in another episode, I talked to another naturopathic doctor in Ontario who has done some work in grief, and we talked about grief and even, you know, my partner and I experienced the loss of a friend. So in dealing with that grief, mm-hmm. I was really conscious of how she would be picking up on that grief, and it actually made her more outwardly, I don't want to necessarily say loving, but she just was more huggy. She was more cuddly and was hugging us and kissing us more often. So in that sense, it was really lovely. But again, there was definitely that concern of like, oh my goodness, how is she going to be impacted by our emotional changes and
kids are so in tune with what's going on with us, even when we don't use words. Even as a little 2-year-old, your daughter might have 20 words in her vocabulary, but you know when someone's hurting, and so there's your empathetic little munchkin going like, I know you have a boo-boo. I'm not sure what it is because I'm too little to understand it, but I know that I'm gonna give you hugs and kisses because that's what you've done to me when I've been feeling sad.
Yeah.
And so that piece, emotions are contagious. And so like being mindful of the grief that you have and speaking aloud, like with a 2-year-old, maybe you're not gonna go, Mommy and Daddy are really sad, but you might. But, you know, as kids get older too, like if they see you crying because of what's going on or upset about something that you've seen on the news, it normalizes that it's okay to feel everything. Life is not just about happiness and joy and bragging about great accomplishments. Like you don't get to do that stuff if you haven't felt angry and felt passionate about things. And let yourself feel really sad when you have to say goodbye to a relationship.
There definitely is a piece where I don't want to pass on the idea that you always have to be happy and that things mm-hmm. always are okay, because they're not always.
That is true. I would say that is probably the main thing that I teach in my practice to parents. Because I think it's a real kind of North American value. Like, we are striving for happiness all the time. And that you don't, it's not, that might not be the goal we're looking for. Maybe it's like, I want to feel satisfied with my life, or I want to feel connected to people, and I want to work hard and know that I'm leaving my mark. And if we're always pushing happy and striving for things to get better and coaching our kids to perform at a higher and higher level, which is truly kind of the modern day parent, where we're all like getting our kids into every activity because they're all going to be, you know, neurosurgeons that are Olympic athletes.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. But it comes at a cost. And sometimes there's not space in a household or space for young people to realize your perfection is like, it has a cost to it. And that if you don't get to show the not so great emotions, ones that are harder to express, you can't be angry, it's not tolerated. You can't say you're scared about things or you feel guilty about making a mistake. If you have to hold that stuff in, our body starts telling us stories. And for many people, they come into an office or seek some counseling support or go to a family doctor for anxiety. And often it's part of the, what gets you to move through anxiety into a place where you're like, that sucked, but now I know how to manage it, is often what are those emotions underneath that I don't know how to let out. And the pandemic has forced everyone through the world to have to build some resiliency, because we're forced to acknowledge the crappy stuff that's going on right now. And hopefully everyone has someone that they can reach out to and talk to. And so, you know, earlier on in the podcast, you said, like, when should people be worried about their kids? And yeah. I would say, as if your kids have someone that they can talk to, and not just doing happy, but someone that really, it could be a mom, a dad, a big sister, a brother, it could be an auntie, uncle, a neighbor, a really close friend that's in a healthy place, but someone that sees them and gets them in any way that they are, and isn't going to judge them when they share their sadness about what's happened, or their anger at, you know, some of the racial conversations that are happening, whatever's going on. If you've got someone you can share stuff with, that moves you up to a place of not being nearly as high risk. The kids that I worry about the most, and adults as well, is when you've got all this crummy stuff stewing around in you and you're keeping it to yourself. So problems get pretty toxic and they get worse when they stay in isolation. And sometimes as parents, we have even teachers in schools, you just get this gut sense, like your stomach or your heart kind of goes, something's just not right with that person. And I would say, I think right now as parents, if your young person is spending more time in their room, or they're just not themselves, they haven't giggled the same way, or they're canceling play dates with friends, whatever it is, being super grouchy, that check in with how they're doing, and don't be scared to ask hard questions around what they're feeling like most days. Are they waking up dreading the day, or do they have anything that they're looking forward to? Or if something's making them angry, do they want to rant about it to you? And if they're that might be the conversation starter, where you get to learn a little bit more about what's going on in the inner world of your kid. And even if it's really hard to hear, know that hearing it is better than not, because even, you know, what's going on in the adolescent mental health front, it's been brewing over the last decade with more depression and anxiety, that through the pandemic, it has escalated some of those symptoms, and the hospitals are still full of young people that are attempting suicide and really, really struggling with serious mental health symptoms.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's the challenging part, and the thing that we're not used to doing, and the thing that we're not taught to do or trained to do, is to actually ask those tough questions and feel okay getting uncomfortable in asking those questions.
And I get it, because even as a counselor, where I've asked many times, are you thinking about not wanting to wake up tomorrow? Do you ever have thoughts that you wish you were dead? There's always the pause. I wonder what kind of answer I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. But also, if the person on the other side is in that space where those are thoughts that are going through his or her their head, they are waiting for someone to ask that question. And then there's a chance that you can offer some support. And if that is something that the young person is not thinking of, and this could even be a partner right now.
Yeah.
If it's not something that they're thinking of, they'll go, why would you ask me that? Like, okay, I'm having a bad day, but not that bad. And you'll get a really honest response that will, and it's not planting seeds there. So if things are truthful and someone says them out loud to us, it sticks. Yeah. But if it's not our truth, it's dismissed. No parent is going to plant a seed of a young person self-harming by asking if that's something that they're thinking of. And I guess to me, I've just seen, unfortunately, too many sad places where someone has kept their pain to themselves and they're no longer on this planet. And I just think not having that conversation, it's not, you never want to wish that you had that, you never want to look back and say, if only I had asked my young person or that person that I was worried about if they were doing okay. And so I would say, be courageous. It's what we have hard conversations as parents all the time and have to do things that don't always feel great and comfortable. That's part of the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because you do hear, unfortunately, about those stories of people like saying, I didn't know, I didn't realize how bad it was, or that there was even that that possibility brewing under the surface.
Mm-hmm. And know that, you know, this is not where every young person, adolescent or adult on the planet would ever get to, but accessing your family doctor. And right now, doctors are doing lots of phone calls. If you're worried as a parent, that is the best first stop. Just touch base. And GPs, 60% of the reason people are accessing them is for mental health issues these days. So they're pretty skilled at knowing, you know, doing an assessment of where someone's at and offering not only just medication options. It might be accessing a naturopath, but there's a lot of behavioral things that we can do in our life that are going to help us stay healthier and boost our mood and get us into a better space. And so, you know, this is kind of the blanket mental health sort of recipe that I think everyone should follow each day, is that you do something that takes care of your head, your heart, and your body each day. So it doesn't matter if you're 2 or 12 or 22 or 82, doing something that's mindful. So that might be playing in a sandbox or writing a poem or listening to music or maybe doing sitting on a yoga mat, if that's your thing, looking at plants out in nature, but something where you get to still your mind and just get lost in yourself. So not distracting and busying ourselves, but just having a chance to be more mindful. So that's head, and the heart is connecting with another human being. So that is in real life. So texting your friends from your bedroom in a dark room is not a heart connection. it's social on some level, but being human beings, we're hardwired to connect in real time. And so we need to see eye contact. We need to be in close proximity and hear people's voice. And so if it's your mom or dad right now, that is your surrogate friend through the pandemic. There we go. But if you're able to go out on a walk or do something, even getting out to you know, volunteer or go to Starbucks and have a little chat with a barista, is that's a heart connection. And loneliness is really the precursor for all sorts of really kind of yucky mental health conditions. So we want to break that loneliness and then do something that moves your body every day. So it gets your heart rate up. When we sweat, we're helping to sweat out, you know, cortisol and release stress hormones. And so we're releasing endorphins in our brain. It makes us feel better too. So those are things that are basic building blocks, that it's like the oxygen that we need each day. We do something that engages our head and our heart and our body.
I love that that idea of again those three aspects of the head, the heart, and the body to really kind of support where we're at with our mental health. And mm-hmm. and I, you know, as you're kind of describing that, I almost think for some people that may be really more, not necessarily just more challenging, but it's something that they really need to kind of keep up on more than other people. And that's where, mm-hmm. you know, the idea that we've kind of talked about before in the past, but the idea that you talk about, especially in your book, about being a super feeler. I mean, there are those of us, there's mm-hmm. Whether they're, you know, kids or again, adults too, who just feel things in a different way than other people and kind of take on those feelings and emotions in whether they're considered more sensitive or you know, other ways of describing it.
I think everyone has to be taking care of their head and heart body right now.
Yeah.
Especially if you're someone that's a sponge that would be called like the super feelers. And for sure, what do you do with the feeling? It's a kid's book that I teach kids in it around what it's like to be a super feeler, which is incredibly empowering language for anyone of any age to realize, oh, that's why I do that. So a super feeler really walks around on with their feelings dial on high volume. So you're a sponge for the emotions that are around you. So when people are in conflict or someone's grieving or people are stressed about how we're going to pay the bills if mom loses her job, a super feeler, without anyone using any words, just takes on that stress, and it can feel incredibly overwhelming. And often for super feelers, you feel things big for yourself as well. And because it's so overwhelming, super feelers have the tendency to push down their emotions and often like might explode in anger in times where you're like, that wasn't like warranted whatsoever, or take care of others as a way to calm themselves down. And it's really hard to ask for what you need as a super feeler. And people, when you do, they might be like, are you kidding me? How could me raising your voice bug you that much? You're overreacting. when really it's like, no way, this is just who I am. I've got to own it. And P.S. if you're raising me and you need to know how to help me take care of my emotions and let me know what I can do with them. And for sure right now, there, you might have a super feeler mom, or, you know, some that your dad might be the super feeler. And kids can be super feelers as well. But when I think of all the pain that's going on in this world and conflict and discourse between people, if it would be hard not for any, like for anyone on this planet not to feel that, but as a super feeler, it might almost make it hard to get out of bed sometimes. Like, how did our world get to this place? And I think I'm a humongous super feeler myself. It's a big part of why I do work with kids, because we talk on our emotional level, often without using words. But I think acknowledging, learning a little bit about what it's like to have that kind of sensitive nervous system, but also taking action to do things to move that anxiety and those feelings that you want to squish down, move it through your body. So how do you take action? So it might be doing something that's more self-care based, or it might be having conversations about things that really matter to you with safe people, or, you know, starting a petition and writing letters to your member of parliament so you feel like you're you're doing something that's going to make a change so that you're part of the solution.
I love that idea. And even, you know, there's a piece of, I mean, I don't want to just kind of color code it in kind of rainbows or anything, but there is, and I don't know how you feel about this, especially right now in terms of looking at silver linings and looking at the time that we're in right now with the pandemic, potentially a silver lining being slowing things down to kind of giving us the space to really look at what works and what doesn't in our world, to have these kind of conversations, especially when it comes to, again, issues around race and, again, some of the issues with kind of police brutality and systemic racism. And then looking at having the time to actually do something and to actually put that in action. So having the conversations and then, okay, what can we do about it? And how can we actually really shift the world to be kind of the place that we want it to be and where we can feel safe in it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think of it, I think looking for silver linings is a well-researched way of stepping out of depression and looking and helping people feel more happiness in life. So it is lovely. Research supported, and we know it just feels good. That in any situation, you can, sometimes the tragedy breaks open places for us to see real growth and opportunity. And so I think, and often reflect on, what is the world that we want to walk out into when this pandemic ends? Mm-hmm. And so that there's this idea of like, are we going to walk into some sort of amazing spiritual regrowth and have like a global community that stands up for things that we want to see in this world? Or are we going to not take the time to reflect and learn and go back to being busy? Mm-hmm. And that really is a personal choice. But I think there are enough people that like have the not busyness right now where you're like, dang, like I'm sitting with some of the stuff that's happening in the world, in my community. And I don't like, I'm not willing to just be a bystander to it. I need to engage and be part of it in a more active way. So I've been having some very cool conversations with young people in particular about the excitement that they have and this real passion and determination to do something differently. And to me, I'm like, you go, because that's the opposite of what happens to a body when we get scared and we get small and we get depressed. So I'm like, yes, go, go, go.
I love that. I love that you're having those conversations, because there is that piece of like, that makes the optimist in me really happy to know that, again, there are young people and maybe older people too, who are like ready to really shift things and make changes. And I wonder, like, okay, you know, is there a way that you can kind of gauge that with your kids in terms of engaging them in those kind of conversations around what's going on in the world and what they'd like to see? I don't know if you have any specific kind of ways that you even kind of broach those subjects.
Sure. You know what? I think anytime you're having a conversation, I think anything that could be challenging, if you start the conversation from a place of love, so whatever you say, it's not going to make me think any less of you, and a place of being really curious about kind of the why behind why someone's coming from their perspective, we can have some pretty cool conversations and grow our perspective. But if it feels like a fight, or I'm going to tell you what you need to think, especially if you're a teenager, you're going to turn them right off. And so I think, you know that if your young person has access to technology, they've heard of George Floyd, they've seen some Black Lives Matter, you just couldn't be a young person with that would be that has a phone that has not been impacted by some of the racial unrest, and in some ways maybe seen some incredibly violent things, and so and not had a chance to process it. So, you know, with George Floyd when he was murdered, you know, they've shown the footage of the whole, you know, 8 minutes and 47 seconds or however long it was. And so you could be a young person that's watched someone be killed many, many times, and you're in your bedroom and you haven't had an adult to debrief it with, to ask what that was like to see. What does your body feel? What does it like? What's your reaction? And whatever the reaction is, it's not good or bad. It's just having a chance for it to be kind of some space held to normalize what they experienced. And so I would think as parents, you know, even just having a casual conversation around, hey, what have you guys seen on the news recently or on your feeds on Instagram or TikTok around Black Lives Matter? And then pause and listen. and that's a really, it's the hard part sometimes as an adult, because we're like, and I hope you'd think this and you better say this. But we're raising our kids to be independent people with their own minds that are able to set their own boundaries. And so helping them to have some time to stew around in what they think and feel about an issue is really important. And so if kids were at school right now, they would be getting a chance to talk about this in social studies. There might be some debriefing groups at school, especially for youth of color. And people right now are processing this solo, unless parents bring, like, invite that conversation to happen, or they're doing it online with other youth, which is great and wonderful. And there's some really neat things happening. But it might, we're missing our chance to have an influence, I guess, as an adult, if we don't have that difficult conversation. People listening wouldn't know this, but I'm biracial. So I'm half Black and half Caucasian. And so, we've been having lots of conversations at my house around race, and probably always have, but more so now. And what I'm finding too with the youth that I'm seeing now, kids that are non-Caucasian are wanting to talk about what it's like to be the other more than I think they've always wanted to, but I think there's more permission to talk about what it's like to be the person in your class from a different religion, or the person in your class that dresses differently, or, you know, that has food that smells kind of unusual to other people and your skin is all like brown. And so again, it's, I think this is a silver lining that's come out of something incredibly tragic, and something that's been tragic for many, many years that we just haven't, always shed a lot of light on.
Yeah. There's, mm-hmm. It almost seems like there's more space to listen and to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And to have people share and connect. And I guess that could also be a silver lining of social media, as much as there can be some real concerns around social media, in terms of kind of contributing to anxiety, depression, and other mental health issues in our kids and, mm-hmm. and teens. But that's a way that can be an easy way to share widely different people's perspectives.
Yeah. There's one website that I'm thinking of. It's called commonsensemedia.org. That is an excellent resource as a teacher or as a parent. So commonsensemedia.org. If you want to have conversations about racialized people or processing George Floyd, LGBTQ plus families. It has so much wonderful, well-researched, very mainstream information, and also some curriculum that you can use with young people to take them through some of these conversations that just because you're a social studies teacher doesn't mean that you feel really ready and equipped to process the death of George Floyd. And so I would suggest that as a starting place. If you're like, oh, I know I want to kind of have a conversation with my kids about this, I wonder how I might do it, that would be an excellent starting point.
That's awesome. Yeah. I will definitely have a link to that in the show notes, because that'll be beneficial for teachers, beneficial for parents as well. I'm going to definitely check that one out too.
Yeah, there's a sweet story as well that's called Something Happened in Our Town. Mm-hmm. And you can watch it on YouTube, and it's a picture book, and someone's reading it aloud. And it's very appropriate for someone like young elementary school. You could actually show it to teenagers and debrief it too. And again, it's a story that takes you through two families in a community making sense and talking about the death of a Black man in their community. And one family is African American and one family is Caucasian. And it's lovely as a way to just open up conversations around how it could feel different and be different depending on the family that you're raised in.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's a
really nice place to start. And I'm pretty sure that you might even have some questions that you can even ask
are
connected to that YouTube clip.
Perfect. Oh, that's great. Oh, thanks so much, Tasha. Like, even again, those tips are so useful. And I so appreciate having the chance to talk to you today about all of this. And I really want to be respectful of your time. So
I know. I'm like, we just sort of like dipped into the topic.
Okay. We're going to have to talk to you again. We'll have to figure out a time when we're both again free, where we can have another conversation about this, if you're open to that.
Absolutely.
Cool. And now, again, if anyone's interested in kind of connecting with you, seeing a kind of the resources that you have, again, you do some great videos and have some great blogs. How people would want to get a hold of your book, What to Do with a Feeling. How can people connect with you?
The best place would be to reach out to me on my website, which is Tasha Belix, which is B and then E-L-I-X, like Felix, the cat, .com, TashaBelix.com. And from there, you can access a link to buy the book on Amazon.ca. And there's a link to my Facebook. And so a big part for me is I want to make sure resources are accessible to anyone, regardless of income level or where you live in this world. And so I am a very dedicated Facebook Live therapist, and I'm by no means offering therapy online, but each week I offer a mental health tool and strategy, and often share stuff from my own life and perspective and experience that really is a positive space to learn tools to manage whatever you're feeling, so that you can feel better on the inside. And so I would definitely check that out. It's my professional page on Facebook. That's Tasha Belix, MA.
Awesome. We'll definitely post those links so that people can again click and find you easily too. So awesome. Thanks so much. So let's kind of switch gears. Now this is the point in the episode where I get to share my mama mess up. I don't know if you have a mama mess up at all, or you just want to, again, provide a little support for me with my mama mess up. But I mean, my mama mess up happened this week. I took myself and my daughter Frankie to see a new family doctor. We were switching our family doctors. So we went to see her, and I didn't even think about the possibility that wearing a mask would provide in terms of an issue. I didn't think about preparing Frankie for kind of seeing people in masks and I took a mask with me almost kind of like a last minute thought. And then as we got to the office, I was like, I'm going to have to wear this mask, of course, because I'm again in a public space, but I haven't necessarily taken Frankie out to public spaces like that. So She wasn't super happy with me wearing the mask. She, you know, was like, no mask. She was like, when I was close to her, she was kind of tugging it off. She was really unhappy. And that was, I really felt like I was messing up because I didn't prepare her for the possibility. I didn't even know how to comfort her or even think about preparing myself in terms of how to comfort her. So that was my mama mess up for this week. And that, the fact that we got through that mama mess up might be my super mom moment for the week too. Like, we survived, and, you know, at least I thought to bring some toys and snacks, and I stayed as positive as I could, in that whole visit. I may have offered a reward of some gummy bears if she took off her shirt for the doctor, so the doctor could listen to her lungs and her heart. But, you know, for me, that was kind of a mama mess up and a super mom moment all rolled into one to get through that.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting how kids, you know, when you they can't see your face, like a smile, yeah, it really changes. It's a big part of how we communicate.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, thankfully, the doctor had a mask and a face shield on in the visit. And at the beginning of the visit, she removed her mask so that Frankie could see her face and her smile. And no, that wasn't enough for Frankie. She was like, okay, yeah, fine. Thanks. But no, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. You know what? I think probably, like, if people are hearing this and they haven't done a doctor's visit recently, that maybe you practice tying a little mask on a teddy bear and talking, yeah, about and showing them what it looks like this is what we do when we go to the doctor's so we stay healthy, so that it's, you're telling the story and prepping them for what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I really could have done that. We actually even have a rubber duck. That's a little duck, rubber duck, who has a surgical mask under his beak. So that could have, playing with that a little bit more could have been a nice prep. Anyway, a lesson learned. So, and you know, my mama must have for this week, in light of everything, just that experience that I had, but also even what you were talking about, Tasha, about, you know, how family doctors can be such a great resource, an easy connection to make in terms of dealing with our kids' mental health and our own mental health. I mean, my mama must have for this week is like having a family doctor that you can easily connect with, who can you feel comfortable with sharing the not so great moments with, and who will be able to listen to you and again provide the resources that you really need. So that sometimes can be a challenge to have access to someone like that. And I really encourage everyone to, if you don't have that person right now, that family doctor right now that you can connect with, to again really reach out and look to see again who that can be for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't have there's not a huge mama mess up that's hopping into my head, nor the mama celebration.
Yeah.
Just coping at our house for this last week. But one thing that I guess that I would offer as sort of self-care to anybody, mm-hmm, and I think as moms, I work full-time, I've got three kids. I really love working, but I'm also a very busy mom. Mm-hmm. That we sometimes give and give, and now more than ever, I think parents need to take some time for themselves. It's not selfish. It's actually necessary when we think of self-care. And I think too, when I reflect on, you know, GPs that I know and doctors and people that are doing lots of hands-on support right now, that there has to be a space for us to take a step back from our role as a mom or whatever, or dad, or, you know, parent of whatever, in whatever capacity we are, and take a step away from our caretaking role at work to take care of ourselves. And I say it just because I know what's kind of happened for me in my personal life over the last few months is, with more increasing high risk cases walking through the door each day, mm-hmm, I'm going home more depleted. And then I feel guiltier because then I'm letting my kids, you know, watch screens more than they should, or like making dinners that are like you know, chicken fingers or whatever. and just honoring the fact that we are in a global pandemic. We're not going to be able to work at the same level that we were before. And having some sort of practice, whether it's journaling or going on a walk by yourself or whatever it might be, if you need to get back into a place of worship, but something where your daily dose of taking care of your soul.
That's so key. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that might be something that I would leave people with, is just to, at the end of the day, no matter what your day's been like, to let yourself dwell around and find three good things that happened for you during the day, so that you've got something positive floating around in your mind as your head hits the pillow.
That's perfect. I love that. Oh, thanks so much for joining me today, Tasha. I really appreciate it. And thanks everyone for joining us today. You can find our show notes at our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. You can connect with us, email us. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. And stay safe and healthy, everyone. We'll talk to you again.